All right, so again, as Rick said, we have Janet Labreck, the commissioner at the Rehabilitation Services Administration, formerly the Mass Commission for the Blind. Commissioner.
Yes, right? I did not.
So you're one of those homebodies.
Yes, and I did not change titles, so yeah, that was
just
nice.
You just had to, you got used to just the title commissioner. Just
yes.
Leave it at that.
Yes.
Very good. So how long now have you been with the RSA?
My goodness. Let's see. I was appointed actually in August of 2013. So I will be coming up on 2 years this summer.
2 years. And I'm sure that all of us who have been associated with the rehabilitation process over the years understand that the RSA is the entity that promulgates the rules under which the rehabilitation process is funded through the federal government. And that there are some other things that are strictly state-funded and under state regulation.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. We are responsible for providing grants to 80 vocational rehabilitation agencies around the country, as well as some other programs. But we most recently, under this newest legislation of the Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act, have had some changes. So some of our programs are in the process of transferring, and in actuality, right now, the hottest news off the press is the fact that those programs have been officially transferred to the ACL, and actually that falls within the Department of Health and Human Services here in Washington, D.C. And those programs are our Independent Living Program, NIDR, which is the National Institute on Disability Rehabilitation Research, and our Assistive Technology Program. Those programs now have officially transferred over to HHS and will be administered out of those programs.
Along with all of their funding associated with that.
Absolutely,
so
yes.
I'm assuming, though, that there's always crossover between one program depends on another program doing its part of the game, that there will be continued interaction between that agency that's responsible for those programs and your own agency?
Yes, and NIDR, for example, is really critical to the vocational rehabilitation program because they've done some outstanding research over the years, and they have been phenomenal partners for RSA and with RSA because they are the ones that conduct a lot of research that really generate interest at the state level for state agencies with regard to promising practices or emerging practices or evidence-based research that clearly demonstrates the types of practices, the types of interventions and strategies and partnerships that are really effective in the vocational rehabilitation community. And the IL program, we will continue to partner with them as well because, in fact, they will be interfacing with the state agencies as well and can offer those on-the-ground services and supports that individuals will continue to need. We will not be administering their program, obviously, but they are still very important to the world of vocational rehabilitation, as well as the assistive technology program. And they are important, obviously, because we rely on them in terms of that information and the research that comes from, you know, examining and certainly implementing important programs or projects and grants around assistive technology and the role that it plays in the lives of individuals with disabilities.
Well, we really appreciate it, and you could hear the vendors here appreciating the support that you've given the Randolph Shepherd Vending Program in your role as Commissioner at RSA. There's so many things going on that affect the lives of blind and visually impaired people in terms of vocational rehabilitation. One, of course, the future of RSA, you're assuming the Randolph Shepherd Vending Program.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the changes that we've seen come down the pike dealing with transitional services. Can you tell us a little bit about what you see that landscape looking like?
Sure. You know, under the new law now, the Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act, I think what is exciting about this new piece of legislation is the fact that Congress has recognized that individuals, particularly youth and students with disabilities, under this piece of legislation have the opportunity now to explore with their vocational rehabilitation counselors in partnership with them the opportunity to really acquire some skills early on pre-vocationally so that individuals who are youth have the opportunity to really address some of the preliminary skill sets that are not necessarily available or experienced by individuals who are youth. So things like internship opportunities and having the ability to work with their counselors around, you know, around career goals that they may identify. And that it does it in a way that really encourages and supports the early exploration. And so the age has dropped, you know, to age 14, encouraging states to begin that process, that dialogue, and allowing states to utilize funding to support that early exploration for VR services for youth with disabilities. And this was important because both in conjunction with the President's job-driven training initiative, as well as with the passage of the Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act, recognizing that the landscape of our employment world is changing and that employment and skills that are going to be necessary for the 21st century have drastically changed. And that means that individuals who are youth in particular have to be educated and trained in a very different way. But the President has specifically called on and agencies both at the federal level as well as the state level will be addressing these issues and certainly participating in these initiatives, have to change how they prepare individuals for the employment opportunities and the skills necessary to be marketable in the 21st century.
So while that's going on with youth, how are we as, you know, because I always think of this as public-private partnership throughout the process, how are we going to deal with, you know, the known fact that the vast majority of people are blind or visually impaired as a result of the aging process and mm-hmm. diseases that accumulate over a lifetime rather than happen to us during our youth. So how is the RSA going to balance those two needs?
Well, fortunately, in WIOA, or the Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act, there are provisions in there as well for those individuals who are adults, certainly, who may be, in fact, acquiring disabilities. And today we all know that that is far more likely to happen, that individuals will acquire a disability in adult and in their adult life, and that many conditions today, you're much more likely to survive than previous years because of medical interventions as well as technology. And so adult education, for example, community colleges are changing how they are preparing adults for employment in the 21st century. They are looking at changing programs and ensuring that adults, in fact, can be prepared for employment in the 21st century by having marketable skills and engaging in the community college experience that will result in them not only receiving a credential from a community college, but having the opportunity to experience apprenticeships that will help with transition them from the workplace, from the college experience rather, right into the workplace so that they may in fact be working with employers while they are experiencing their educational endeavors, and that they are also acquiring those employment skills exactly at the same time. So it really looks like a co-op model, if you will, like we used to have and continue to have in Northeastern University, where individuals who are adults will have the opportunity to work as well as acquire their educational credentials that are necessary for them, and then move right into employment. And then internships as well are really important. And so we're looking at, you know, how the states are both engaging in those kinds of partnerships with the business community that will in fact result in having those internship experience as well as having access to education that will in a sense transition them from education right into employment. So looking at all of those issues, you know, for adults are definitely a big piece of this conversation and a big piece of the legislation.
Well, you're singing the song of my co-host over here, Rick Morin, who is a graduate of Northeastern and experienced the co-op process and believes in it deeply, that it allowed him his success in his life as an employed person, working for, what was it, EDS for a while, that became HP, that became et cetera, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
But the co-op process, he really does firmly believe, made his success possible.
Well, you know, it's so important today because as our corporations are changing as well, and we all know that we went through that period of years where the United States was outsourcing a lot of the manufacturing, and that now we're talking about insourcing and bringing that manufacturing back into the country. But what's different is the fact that manufacturing today requires a completely different set of skills necessary to integrate appropriately into manufacturing. But it also is going to require individuals to have technology skills and knowledge and proficiency, and it's going to require that individuals really have those skill sets, not necessarily after they graduate, but that they should in fact be transitioning through that process while they are receiving their education. So there are some pretty innovative approaches to looking at companies that will be offering opportunities to train right within the companies, and there are some models that are out there that are already doing that, so that as they're going through their educational experience, they're already getting that training right within the corporation, so that those individuals can actually be integrated into the employment workforce once they complete it and they're already on the job. So though, you know, there are many, many different opportunities that will come from this. And so the fact that the landscape of our employment world is changing, so is now the educational system, so is now the job training programs that are funded, and so are our models as well as the regulations within the Rehabilitation Services Administration to reflect a lot of these changes.
Well, speaking of regulations, I know that many people believe that once a law is passed, the job is done, and you know better than that.
Absolutely.
So you're through the process of developing the regulations and then implementing those regulations. Where are we time-wise in that whole process?
Well, we are actually in the beginning stages of the regulatory process, because when WIOA was signed into law on July 22nd of 2014, Congress gave us 180 days to reflect those changes in the regulations and put out an NPRM, which is a notice of proposed rulemaking, across the country to allow the country to comment on the vocational rehabilitation and the proposed changes to the program. And so we are working very diligently on that. We have very, very different sweeping changes now, just about over 100 changes.
Oh, yeah.
To the vocational rehabilitation program nationally as we knew it before. It will look very differently. It is very progressive. It is, I think, filled with opportunities for innovation. And so during the spring, early spring, there will be an NPRM notification that will be coming out across the country. And that is intended to give folks who are interested in the vocational rehabilitation program the opportunity to comment on some of the proposed changes under WIOA, some of which that we will be working under right within the statute, and some of which we will have some control over, some of which we will not have control to work outside of the statute. And so, but it does give us an opportunity to hear from the community, and we will also be conducting outreach and going around the country to actually have some town hall hearings and offering some calls as well and webinars as well for the community to really comment on the new changes under WIOA.
Excellent. As you can tell, I would call it a fairly complicated process. It never happens as quickly as some would like, but it does allow for opportunities for people to speak out and give their opinion and add that to what your agency and other agencies need to hear from the electorate. Those of us out there who are both potential consumers of the service and those who are concerned about those who would be consumers of those services. What would you say the biggest change is going to be as a result of this? Once it's all written up, implemented, those kinds of things, you know, they talk about, you know, not something not being the way you grew up expecting it to be. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some pretty significant changes. Certainly education is rapidly changing.
Yes.
The Department of Labor says a typical graduate today is going to have to be retrained at least 6 times in their lifetime, mm-hmm. during their working life. And of course, we've already seen that people are working to a greater age than we ever expected them to. The whole system was designed on a retire when you're 65 kind of basis. And that's clearly not happening in this country right now. You had mentioned the changes in terms of insourcing things that we saw outsourced in the past, but mm-hmm. insourced in more of a high-level trained kind of workforce, not just a matter of bringing your brawn to work, but bringing your brain to it as well, and highly skilled series of things that you might bring to what used to be considered to be pretty simple labor kind of activities. How can we do this when there's so many pressures on the funding that normally is expected to pay for the bulk of what we're talking about?
Well, I think those are very good points that you just made. And I think that, you know, some of the changes will actually see some changes in how resources are actually allocated. There will be opportunities for both business, and you talked about some of the sweeping changes. What are some of those changes going to look like for the VR program? And I think that what's interesting about this piece of legislation is it doesn't just necessarily focus on the workforce system. Now it also focuses and challenges business to come to the table, not just with their ideas and commitment, but also with regard to resources and opening, you know, the doors to changing how the landscape of the workforce looks like, but also as partners, and to come to the table with information and with training programs that they specifically can also have the opportunity to partner with the various workforce programs in our country. And so that's a major change, you know, having business and industry at the table. They are the experts and know the landscape of where we are moving. And so we need to partner with them. So that will be one of the, you know, significant changes in making sure that agencies across the country, not just specifically VR, but the entire workforce development system, that we are working alongside of them as partners, and that we are learning from business and industry, and that we are open to having those partnerships that are going to be able to be effective in transition. But also, I think having the conversation about the need to make sure that agencies are delivering the information. I think our counselors, in looking at the need to retrain counselors and making sure that they have access, you know, to the information. It isn't enough today to be a VR counselor and have a certain amount of information. What's more important today is that you have the right information, the information that's going to say what kinds of skills are going to be marketable, and do our counselors have that information? Because they need to communicate that information to their respective consumers that they're working with, not just necessarily in the VR world, but also in the workforce development system. Congress was very specific in their intent in looking at the one-stop career centers as well, and they have some significant changes as well, but they were also very, prescriptive in talking about ensuring that not just certain populations that come through the one-stop career centers have accessibility, but that in fact there are more comprehensive services that are going to be available to all populations, including and specifically mentions individuals with disabilities and those individuals with significant disabilities, to come through and not just have a referral, you know, type system, but in fact that there are deliverables that individuals can now walk in and expect to be able to receive comprehensive services, and that those, that we're not just counting cases that are closed, but we are also, both in the workforce development system as well as in the VR system, that we are counting those individuals' cases who are open and in fact tracking what's happening to these individuals, even after they are successfully employed. How long are they employed? Are they staying with the same employer? Are they able to receive promotions in the future? We need to have a better understanding of what's happening to individuals, both on a short-term level as well as a long-term level. So there are combined data systems that are required now under WIOA, and it is requiring that we work together as the core partners to be able to provide that information and conduct research, you know, that will follow all of these programs, and more importantly, that will look at the outcomes. There are also, you know, you talked about what are some of the changes. There are also sanctions involved now. And that Congress in this piece of legislation, does require, and folks have the opportunity to read about it and to follow, you know, what some of this legislation is discussing. But there are sanctions now that are in place for states that are not achieving the goals and objectives of their programs. And there's technical assistance that will be required as part of the law now under WIOA, and that individuals or agencies that are not performing, or states that are not performing and not meeting their measures or indicators, you know, will face sanctions under the governor's reserve programs in their respective states. So those are all clearly now spelled out under the Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act, and folks have the opportunity to read that. It's a massive document. I must bring to your awareness. Yes. So good luck, because I think it's well over 1,000 pages. So, but these are some of the sweeping changes I think that will lead to reform, and that will have the opportunity to better position individuals with disabilities.
I'm going to bring it back around, if I may, to the vending program.
Mm-hmm.
The vending program is a unique program in that it, through government assistance and through certain obligations on the part of government entities to participate in the program, allow blind and visually impaired people who are properly trained to operate these vending stands. They're given a preference in accomplishing that. And they pride themselves, as you've heard over the past couple of days here at this conference, in being independent businessmen and women. Where does self-employment play a part in the future of WIOA and the regulations to implement it?
Under this new legislation, and this is what is also exciting about it, is that under this piece of legislation, it also recognizes not only the need for individuals to prepare for employment through employers, but it also has a component with it, along with the President's job-driven training initiative as well, to recognize the choice of those individuals who choose to be entrepreneurs, and also recognizes the fact that our country thrives on entrepreneurs, and that we make the best progress, and that oftentimes it's the small, you know, mom-and-pop establishments that really support our country when it comes to talking about the nation's labor workforce, particularly when you're looking at the states as individual states, that many of the employment opportunities are given by those small mom and pop establishments that are active, and so under this piece of legislation, entrepreneurship is important, and under this new law, which is why I think under the Randolph Shepherd Act, and I have to say I am so incredibly committed, you know, to ensuring that this program maintains itself under the current act that we have, but also that the program move forward, and that individuals in this particular program understand that we have a couple of challenges that we face in this particular program, and we heard Katrina and others talk about it, and that is that we are also facing an aging population of people who are in this particular program, and that we need to ensure that we're providing the youth information about this program. And so we need to challenge the state agencies or the state licensing authorities, the agencies, which we call SLAs, that that they work alongside of each other, folks in the Randolph Shepherd program, because these are integral parts of the resources that state agencies receive. But more importantly, these are areas of opportunity for individuals with disabilities to become entrepreneurs and economically self-sufficient. And so we need to make sure that they have the tools and that youth have the information. Our youth today are brought up in an incredibly brand-conscious country. And so they may not want to conduct business in the same way, you know, that is currently happening in this program. And that they, in fact, are receiving their education very differently than we all did coming up in the vocational rehabilitation program. Technology plays a much more critical role in what they do and what they're able to do. And I think that we need to challenge ourselves in making sure that we are presenting this program in a light that will be supportive and is in alignment of the administration's goals, but also, more importantly, that individuals continue to be interested in this program.
Well, as you probably remember, I was a vendor for a year when I was living out in Oregon. It was one of the hardest years of labor I've ever put in. But it was in a day and age where there wasn't technology in support of it.
Mm-hmm.
Technology was a talking calculator that was uniquely designed for blind people to do addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. End of story. Nowadays, we were just over in the exhibit hall taking a look at things, and there's not a vending machine over there that isn't smarter than the first computer that I used when I first moved to Massachusetts.
Wow.
So there are some amazing things that are possible in vending that didn't simply exist a half a dozen years ago.
I have to tell you, about 2 months ago, we invited folks to come down and bring a pizza truck into DC and to have it outside of our workplace. I wanted to see the model. I had seen it in Texas, but I was ill during that presentation, and I wanted to give it more time to see exactly how technology has even impacted the food trucks. And so every day outside of my building, there are about anywhere between 9 and 11 or 12 food trucks that offer a variety of food options, you know, to the public. These are the old-fashioned, well, what I call the old-fashioned, you know, food trucks. And when the pizza truck came, we caused major chaos. It was amazing. They, I think, sold, 262, I believe, pizzas.
So, Janet, are you pepperoni or vegetable?
Pepperoni.
In 2 hours.
I'm anything. pepperoni. And people were tweeting as they were in line. This was the general public, Homeland Security, the Department of Education, and public. And we were like, no, this is just a demonstration.
There's hope for our barbecue truck, Brian.
There you go.
Yeah, wow. So these are the kinds of advances and changes. But what was so exciting about the pizza truck that I learned was that there's an opportunity for people to lease and have that opportunity to acquire, you know, a pizza truck like that and sell it. And people were saying, when's it coming back? When's it coming back? And I was telling folks, you guys have no idea what chaos you caused, in Washington. People are still looking for this pizza truck. So these are the kinds of opportunities, I think, that are really out there now that we couldn't consider before.
Well, I've always been very excited about the prospect of using the Randolph Shepherd Vending Program as a way to expand and be a training site, not just for working, if you will, in food vending,
yes,
but also as a way to learn to run a business, just a business.
Yes.
Is there an opportunity in the new WIOA for turning Randolph Shepherd into an opportunity as a step up, but also a step up and beyond?
You know, I think under WIOA there is, and what we have said to folks is that people really have the opportunity to be as creative as they possibly can. Even outside of WIOA, there is nothing prohibiting us from really, looking at ways that individuals can, in fact, acquire a business, and that we have to be far more creative than we have been in the past about it. So I think that there will be these kinds of opportunities and discussions, and that they will only be limited by the scope of the skill sets that individuals have, the preparation, the experience. But I also think that as we're talking about some of these opportunities, that you're right, we need to also reach back and make sure that individuals who are in these entrepreneurial programs, that they in fact reach back and help other individuals who are blind to acquire the same experience and knowledge that they have been so fortunate to have acquired and worked so hard, you know, to achieve, so that we can encourage other individuals who are blind to go the same route.
Yes, it can be an incredibly empowering, well, mentoring experience. When I first entered the world of work, I had a mentor. His name was Wally Menning. He's a former president of Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America. So we're talking 40 years ago, Janet. But back in that day, I went to his vending stand. I worked in his vending stand as a, you know, a busboy, those kinds of things, and learned from the ground up, so that eventually when I did acquire a stand of my own, I was already up and running in what it meant to be a vendor, not just a cook, not just the cash register operator, but a true owner-operator of a business, where you had to take care of the books and not just wash the dishes, but also make sure that everything got paid on time, all the bills got paid, all the reports got done, all of the taxes were appropriately paid. And that applies to any business you get into, not exclusively food vending in one form or another. So I'm excited to hear that there's possibilities in the new WIOA to turn these kinds of training opportunities into ways to become a true owner of your own business.
Well, and I think also, too, that we have the opportunity to really look at models that are working and to share that information with other states, so that they can be encouraged as well, you know, to look at some of these models. And I think that's what's important about our relationship that we've had in the past with NIDR and the research entity, because they conduct the research and look at the practices and can establish that evidence-based practices that can be, you know, very lengthy. It takes a long time, you know, to establish that the research and the outcomes of that research. And so it's critical that we have those models that are really going to support and encourage other states also to consider those models. Just because something is happening or not happening in one state doesn't mean you don't have the ability to do it. And it doesn't mean that you can't try something. And I think that that's what's really unique about this piece of legislation, is that it does encourage innovation, and it encourages, you know, opportunity, taking advantage of those opportunities and doing it in a way that really will support results, you know, in terms of the actual outcomes.
Well, I want to thank you on behalf of ACB Radio and RSVA for agreeing to be interviewed here on the program today, and encourage everybody to keep an eye out for those proposed rules, because this is what really does implement what is strictly an idea in law, becomes our living reality in regulation. So once again, thank you for coming on board with us today and agreeing to be interviewed, and continue to learn from hands-on experience here at Sagebrush 2015. Thank you all for listening.